Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
No one benefits from, regardless of what you think of the former president, no one benefits from him not being kept safe, particularly in this run-up to the election. Right? Can you imagine where we would be today?
Oh, I don't even want to fathom that.
Right? What would you even do in terms of the election?
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Vitrano.
And live on the YouTubes, you can check out the WTMJ YouTube channel if you want to watch the radio. Our podcast page available to you anytime. Greg Pancake Hill produces the program and posts things as we go, just in case there's anything you missed. So you can get that on the app, on our website, or text Vince to 855-616-1620. Eric Bilstead, Vince Vitrano here with you. Debbie on the cars through 9 o'clock, and Adam Roberts in the newsroom this morning. You want to do Packers? Feels a lot better this week.
Oh, my gosh. Right. Victory Monday? Yes.
He's got room. Josh Jacobs gallops three. Biggest run in his short tenure with the Packers. Jacobs for 40 yards.
Fox Sports on the call. 40 of his 151 rushing yards.
What's your three?
I thought you were going to play the whole thing.
No, you got to come up with something.
Okay. Got the win.
Very good.
No Tausch today. We have ESPN's Jason Wilde gracious enough to join us here at this special time. Wilde, really appreciate it. How are you?
Hey, where do I text Vince? What's the text number again? Because I want to tell Vince to be nicer to his brother.
Oh, that's actually good producing because I don't think I gave out the number. 855-616-1620. What, you saw Nick up there?
I did. I saw him at back to school night the other night.
And, what's his problem?
He's such a nice guy. I don't know why you're always putting him down.
I know. Why is that the narrative with him always? I'm fine. I haven't said a word about him in like forever. But every time somebody I know is up in Green Bay and they run into my brother who does radio up there, they're like, yeah, I saw your brother. He said this, that. I'm like, what? What?
Oh, problems.
Oh, man. All right. What do you want to...
Well, I feel bad because we had a conversation with Malik Willis on Wednesday, and I asked him the most, in my opinion anyway, innocuous question about how even-keeled he seemed. And I said, are you just that way with us, or is that kind of how you are all the time? Which, by the way, turned out to be part of his story yesterday, right? I mean, LaFleur talked about it, how calm he was for a guy who had only been there for 3 weeks. And he turned and he said to me, I know y'all are trying to get me. I don't want no beef. And I was like, wait, what? So I'm creating beef between you and your brother, obviously, because that's I'm stirring stuff up. But I think this was indicative of his experience in Nashville with the Titans media. I think he was a disappointment as a draft pick, got caught up in a tough situation with a change in general manager. And so I went over to him yesterday after I said, hey, I know we got off to a rocky start. And I had talked to him later Wednesday to say, hey, I'm not trying to get you. I thought it was a simple question, but I congratulated him, which I don't do very often in the locker room, because I was really happy for a guy who I think was put in some tough spots in Tennessee and was put in a really tough spot all week long. But Matt LaFleur and that coaching staff designed the perfect game plan to allow him to succeed, to get the running game going and get a W in a game where I think a lot of people thought they were in trouble.
Yeah, Jason, I have to admit, I thought this had to have been one of the best wins of LaFleur's career.
It was. And you know, that it's funny that you say that because I asked him after the game if this was one. I said, you've won a lot of football games here in the last 5+ years, but this has to be one of your favorites. And he said, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of, you know, look, we're all wired differently, right? But I don't know if there's anything more satisfying for anybody in whatever walk of life where people have low expectations or are doubting you and you're facing a lot of adversity that you have to overcome. And Lord knows not having your star quarterback qualifies as adversity for an NFL coach. And you come up with a way to succeed in the face of all that. And I don't know if you guys got to see the locker room video that the Packers posted. They had to do a lot of bleeping. because he was so fired up. But this clearly meant a lot to him and to this team. It was a heck of a win yesterday.
Talking with ESPN's Jason Wilde here on Wisconsin's Morning News. You know who else had a good day yesterday? Brian Gutekunst, Packers general manager. A number of the choices that he made most recently in this offseason, bringing in Josh Jacobs at running back, who might still be running. And, you know, on the other side, Xavier McKinney got his second pick in as many weeks. I mean, he's hitting on both of those major offseason decisions.
He definitely is. And look, Malik Willis, again, he chose to trade for him instead of keeping one of the two guys that were in camp with this team. And Malik Willis did his job, even though it was a limited role that they put him in to do it. Look, I thought Josh Jacobs was terrific. I mean, he did have the fumble near the goal line when they were about to go up 17-0, so it would have probably been a blowout instead of close at the end. But you're right, and I really like Xavier McKinney. Tausch gives me a hard time because I compared him in terms of the impact he's had in the locker room to Charles Woodson. And he's like, you can't compare him to Charles Woodson. I've reached out to Charles because I want to have him on the show so either he and Tausch can gang up on me and tell me I'm an idiot, or he can confirm my thoughts. Because what Charles did with Al Harris and Nick Collins and Tremont Williams and Jarrett Bush and all those guys in that locker room back then on their way to Super Bowl 45 was he elevated everyone. Everyone was drawn to him. They dressed up for games, which they had never done before. They watched film and prepared in a different way than they had before. And I think Xavier McKinney has had that same impact on a defensive backfield where there's a lot of young guys other than Jair. And so I think it's really been neat to see that group. And here's the crazy stat for you. Last year, the Packers had 7 interceptions all season long. Only one team, Tennessee, had fewer. They have 5 interceptions through 2 games. So they should surpass, given the way Will Levis plays quarterback for the Titans, they should surpass last year's total sometime in the third quarter next Sunday.
What happens next with Jordan Love? Will this be a week-to-week thing where we think maybe he's playing until the Sunday, then they'll determine whether or not he's actually going out there?
Yeah, so my understanding has been all along that the expectation was that it wasn't so severe that he'd be at the 6-week end of the projection of 3 to 6 weeks of him being out, that he would be more at the optimistic end. And I know Tausch, you know, he misses almost as many days on your show as he misses on ours. I know he he's going to the Vikings game in 2 weeks. And I would in no way be surprised if Jordan Love starts that game. But I would be very surprised. I think they're going to play it safe with him. They may play the game that they played this week, but I would expect him to miss the game in Tennessee. Malik Willis starts against his former team. And then Jordan either starts against the Vikings on the 29th or starts in Los Angeles against the Rams on the 6th. I think the question is, which of those two games will be his return? I will be very surprised if he plays against the Titans, but I won't rule it out.
ESPN's Jason Wilde on with us this morning. Wilde, as fans, we always react to what we saw last and high or low. So looking at what the Packers did on the ground and that fantastic running game, that was split up between multiple backs as well. The offensive line had a big day. We can't expect to put 200-plus yards on teams throughout the season, right? That also is a very bad defense against the run that we saw.
Yeah, the amazing thing about the Colts is that they gave up more rushing yards in week one than any team in the league with 213 yards against the Texans. Joe Mixon, their running back, had 159 yards. And the Packers had surpassed that league-worst total before halftime. They had 237 yards at halftime. So, yes, unless they're playing the Colts for 15 more weeks, they probably will not put up those rushing numbers. And I'm sure the Titans are saying, all right, the Colts knew that they were going to run the ball and they still couldn't stop them. We know they're going to run the ball. We are going to stop them. So they will have to adjust. And I do think two quick things. One, I thought Adam Stenovich, who LaFleur credited, did a really good job of creating a lot of misdirection. The running plays weren't different running plays than what they had in their playbook. They just dressed them up with a lot of motion, a lot of fakes to the wide receivers that were running past and running around in the backfield doing whirly birds back there. I thought that was part of the confusion that they created. But one of the things that Steno told us last week was, if a defense is going to be hell-bent on stopping the run, Malik is going to have to make some throws. And we're not just going to bang our heads against the wall if they're committed to stopping the run. They were able to be productive this time. If they're not able to do it next week, they are going to have to put the ball in Malik Willis's hands more often. And I thought he made two really good throws. I thought the touchdown throw, from a timing perspective, it was a tiny window with that defender who had a chance to tip it away just before it got to Dontavian Wicks, was a really good throw. And then he put the ball right where he needed to for a 50-50 ball to Romeo Doubs, and Doubs went up and got it. He did not make those cataclysmic mistakes that most backup quarterbacks make that lose you games, and he's going to have to do that again if he's the starter against the Titans.
ESPN's Jason Wilde. Appreciate the extra time today, Wilde. And if you see my brother, tell him I love him.
Well, somebody's got to. All right,
guys. Poor
Take
Nick.
Take care. Be good.
Take care, buddy.
You know, that's another point that Wilde makes, though. You know what? Who elevated their guy? Who came to help Malik Willis?
Yeah.
That catch that Doubs made, that was Doubs just saying, I'm helping my guy here.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna
get the ball. It reminded me of something that Donald Driver said, or maybe it was Javon Walker, who said after the Brett Favre game when he lost his father and he threw 17 touchdowns
Oakland. Yeah.
They said in the receiver room, and I can't remember which receiver said, but if you have to climb a ladder, go get a ladder, climb that ladder and get that football. We're going to do that for this guy. We're going to elevate him. You saw the wide receivers do that. You saw the O-line do that. You saw the running backs do that. And the defense, oh, by the way, as well. So Feeling all good here on this Monday morning. A28 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Well, the neighbors never saw it coming.
Never heard anything directly from him that expressed any kind of hatred or that would even make me worry about his ability to do something like he's being alleged to do.
It's a guy who lives near the man suspected of making an attempt on former President Trump's life this weekend at a golf club in Florida, 58-year-old Ryan Wesley Routh. I don't believe authorities have officially announced that, but ABC News is going with that as the suspect, as is pretty much everyone. So that is out there this morning as that investigation is just really getting started. This happened Sunday, the former president staying at Mar-a-Lago, and then apparently this is Trump National, which is right nearby. But it was apparently an unscheduled, like, late decision. Yeah, I'm going to play golf, which the former president has done lots of times.
Right,
he's an avid golfer, right? So you would think this property is quite familiar to the Secret Service detail. However, some rumblings of, man, we really would have liked to have a little bit more lead time.
And the Secret Service has been plenty of stories over the years, and even recently, too, about the challenges of protecting a VIP when they're golfing. And now presidents have been golfing since
ever.
Yeah. But like that's been one of the, always has been one of the issues that they've run into. I don't want to say issues, but one of the challenges with Trump, because he spends time on the golf course.
It's a big property as well. And if you've been watching any of the television coverage, they've been showing you sort of how the course sets up, and it's perimeter that is close to public spaces or public areas.
Right.
So obviously it's a private club or whatever, so you don't just let anybody in there. But there are points that seem to be accessible from the outside that would have been where this individual is alleged to have gotten in. Apparently, they found him when the Secret Service detail, about a hole ahead of where the former president was, goes up and checks that area before he comes into that close proximity. That's where one Secret Service agent said they saw what appeared to be the barrel of a long gun poking out from the bushes.
Yeah. That's what they saw. They were doing their recon, and they saw a barrel of a gun, and then the firing began. As of now, there's been no confirmation or determination as to whether or not this guy actually fired his gun, AK-47. You wonder how this happened or where was this just out of luck? I mean, did they even know that the president was even going to be golfing that day?
some evidence to suggest that the individual had been surveilling the president for some time, was familiar with his movements.
Sure.
Right. But if it was a if it was something that was scheduled late or wasn't really on his docket for the day, how would he have known? Or might have just been monitoring everything that,
right.
that he's been doing. Who knows how long
right.
exactly that he's been following him.
When
yes.
the motorcade moves, you know who it is.
Right. Routh apparently vacated the scene when he was fired upon by Secret Service, left behind what they said was an AR-15 with a scope as well, backpack with some other stuff in it. So they believe that they've got the right guy. ABC's Christian Cordero with an interesting point about what happens next for the former president. He's supposed to be in Michigan tomorrow.
Democratic and Republican members of the task force investigating the shooting have already requested a briefing from the Secret Service on yesterday's incident. There are now bipartisan calls to have Trump's security match that of Biden's. One Democratic representative saying anything less than maximum protection is a self-inflicted wound that puts our nation's stability at grave risk.
Interesting point. That's Democrats again calling for it, saying like, no one benefits from, regardless of what you think of the former president, no one benefits from him not being kept safe, particularly in this run-up to the election. Right? Can you imagine where we would be today?
Oh, I don't even want to fathom that.
Right? What would you even do in terms of the election? What would Republicans do to get a new nominee? Would it just be Senator Vance, who's the vice presidential nominee? Does he just ascend to the top of the ticket then? Who do you put on the bottom of the ticket? All of that. Is that even what they would do? Would there be calls to delay the election? Everything that, you know, constitutionally would cause problems with that. But we'd be in a bad place as a country, regardless of what you think of the former president, if any of these assassination attempts had been successful. And Democrats clearly understand that as well. I think the call for him to get the same level of security as a sitting president, at least for the next couple of months while we get to the election, probably makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he's supposed to be in Michigan. I believe he's got a town hall in Flint tomorrow.
Yes.
So much more on the suspect expected. The difference between this and the last assassination attempt on the president is this guy's still alive. So maybe they're able to get some answers out of him. Maybe he's got a point to make and we'll be entirely happy to talk. We'll see. But much more to learn about his intentions this morning. 8:33 on Wisconsin's Morning News. From the WTMJ Breaking News Center, word of a bus crash, school bus that crashed in northern Ozaukee County. WTMJ's Adam Roberts has been digging, getting some information on this. Where are we at, Adam?
So right now, Vince, details still very limited on this, but we do have some critical information so far. It's being called a rollover accident near Highway E and J Road. It's just south of the Sheboygan-Ozaukee County line. Reportedly, up to 40 students were on board this bus at the time of the crash. We do have a statement out right now from the Random Lake School District just put out moments ago, which does confirm that students were injured in the accident and are currently receiving medical attention. The district says any impacted families have been contacted. The remaining students on the bus actively being picked up by parents at this time. The Sheboygan County Medical Examiner has been contacted. What we do know is they are aware of the incident, but are referring things to the Ozaukee County Sheriff's Office. And at last check, their lines were busy. Tried to get through to them just a few moments ago. Got an immediate busy signal there. So what we know, again, a rollover bus crash appears to have happened at Highway E and J Road, involving up to 40 students on board. Multiple helicopters have been requested to the scene. And again, the school district is aware and says students were injured and are receiving medical attention on the scene. This is a very much breaking and developing situation. We will have plenty more throughout the morning on WTMJ.
Well, and your point about who has jurisdiction over this, from where we're going to get that information, you're dealing with Southern Sheboygan County, in a district that is in Sheboygan County, but the accident actually having happened in northern Ozaukee. So, right, then you have these different entities, and nobody wants to step on anybody's toes in terms of who releases what information.
Exactly. It sounds like authorities in Grafton and West Bend are also involved. Okay. So, again, very much a crossroads of rural districts and precincts, if you will. So, many people responding to this right now.
Okay. Obviously, still developing is this breaking story in northern Ozaukee, southern Sheboygan County. We'll keep an eye on it for you and hope to have more information at top of the hour news. 844. On Wisconsin's Morning News, sharing this amazing story as we launch another WTMJ Cares initiative. Bayview native Lance Saijon, the Medal of Honor recipient, survived 46 days in the Vietnamese jungle before being captured and literally tortured to death. His fighter jet memorial at the Milwaukee airport, you see it right as you're driving into the airport, is now in desperate need of renovation. WTMJ's John Mercure has Lance's heroic story.
Lance Sijohn was an All-American boy. He was All-Conference in football at Bayview High School. He was president of his class and starred in the school musical. Charlie Larson became friends with Lance in kindergarten. They stayed close and were best friends for the next 20 years.
A leader is someone who has lots of followers. And Lance had lots of followers because he helped all of us around him elevate our game. So we all became better.
Lance's sister Janine was 12 years younger than him and remembers the day he left for the Air Force Academy.
I was almost inconsolable that I was in such tears.
The classwork at the academy was tough, but Lance thrived on the physical part of the training and he worked hard in the classroom. After graduation from the academy, Lance became an F-4 Phantom fighter pilot. He knew his deployment to Vietnam would be dangerous.
And said, I will not be captured. I will not give in. And there was a great foreboding in his voice.
In Vietnam, the 25-year-old was almost immediately in harm's way. Lance sent this recording home to his family.
Of course, this place isn't really too secure an area. All night long, you can hear the artillery going off in the background.
November 9th, 1967. Lance and Colonel John Armstrong lifted off into the dark Vietnam sky on Lance's 52nd combat mission. Their F-4 streaked to the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Laos. The plane rolled into its target in the jungle below and released its bombs. The bombs were defective and exploded prematurely, engulfing the F-4 in a fireball. Lance ejected, was knocked unconscious, and landed in the jungle with a fractured skull, compound leg fracture, and a mangled hand. A few days later, the Sijohns got a knock at their Bayview front door.
I said, Mom, there's two Air Force men here. She knew what that meant. And she just went down to her knees. You could see the terror in her eyes before they spoke. I heard the back door opening. And I heard the usual whistle of my dad whistling through the back door. I heard his big dress shoes, heavy soles walking through the kitchen. And as he turned the corner, he saw the two Air Force men. And his head went back and he howled like an animal. And he said, no, 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 no.
Severely injured, Lance evaded capture for 46 days.
There were times he would sit up against a tree and try and determine how many feet could he crawl again. Could he do 10 feet? Could he do 20 feet? And he would pass out from exhaustion.
When he was finally taken prisoner, Lance had gone from 220 pounds to 80. He was taken to a bamboo prison in the middle of the night. And the next day, one of his academy classmates and a fellow prisoner of war, Guy Gruders, saw Lance and didn't even recognize the shell of his friend.
I said, who are you? And he said, Lance. I said, Lance who? He said, Sijohn. I said, oh, no, not Sijohn. Not Sijohn. Not Sijohn. I was honestly in shock. I can literally pick him up in my arms like a baby.
Days turned into weeks, and Lance was tortured relentlessly, yet refused to give his captors any information.
He wouldn't answer anything else, so they beat him, and they beat him on his wound.
As his condition deteriorated, his fellow POWs begged Lance to save himself by answering questions. He refused to break the code of conduct.
I'm just so sad. The tears, my face is covered in tears.
Guy held Lance, his last moments in that dirty, cold, wet North Vietnamese prison.
When they took him out of there, he just called for Dad. Dad, I need help. Dad, I need you. Dad.
The last moment of his life, the last moments when he spoke, were not in hatred for the enemy. They were in love for his father.
Lance Sijohn's family received his Medal of Honor 8 years after he died.
The guy is a hero for all ages. I mean, for the whole country, not just Milwaukee or Wisconsin.
I will be forever grateful for how he influenced my life.
Chris Cassidy runs the National Medal of Honor Museum.
To think about not only just surviving, but evading capture that whole time It's just truly inspirational.
Now the plane and plaza that bear Lance's name at our airport are in need of repair.
We really have to do better at making sure that this looks presentable and honorable to keep the legacy and the story of Lance alive.
Dan Buttrey is the president and CEO of the War Memorial Center.
Let's help pull this together and give this man the dignity in his memory. We owe it not just to the Cijon family, but we owe it to this community. His story represents us. He was born and grew up in Bayview, Wisconsin.
John Mercier, WTMJ News.
And that replica of Lance Cijon's fighter jet at the airport needs to be painted and repaired. If you'd like to contribute to help the restoration of our hero's plane and legacy, please text the word Lance to 855-616-1620. That's L-A-N-C-E. Do the WTMJ talk and text line, 855-616-1620.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee from the Annex Wealth Management Studios. This is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
WTMJ forecast sponsored by Dave Drakamp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. Not a drop of rain in the five-day forecast. Mostly sunny and warm today with a high of 88 degrees, bit cooler near the lake. Pretty much the same thing on Tuesday, and then mostly sunny Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week. Each day with temperatures in the upper 70s to low 80s. Right now, Milwaukee at 69 degrees, the WTMJ Political Power Hour with Steve Scafidi coming up next.